5 by 5.
This is 5 by 5, a podcast from the Frontier Master Executive Council. 5 by 5, the podcast for the ALPA pilots of Frontier Airlines. We hear you loud and clear.
All right, today we jump into part one of a multi-part series on retirement insurance. It's super important, very, very important. Section 27, Section 28 of our contract. Jeff Hicks is here. He brought in Celeste Sweeney from ALPA National as well. Their introductions are right around the corner, so stay tuned for that. We recorded, by the time it's all said and done, two different sit-downs, over 3 hours of content, and I did not want to put you through that, nor did the MEC. So it's been trimmed way down, and it's been packaged up into nice little chunks, probably around an hour and a half of total content broken up over three episodes. So stay tuned for those. Additionally, you're going to hear it in just a moment. I wasn't feeling super well when we recorded this. Had a horrible head cold, so my voice is going to sound a little bit off. Just bear with me through that. I'm feeling much better now. If you're concerned, I'm good. Don't worry. Stay tuned to the end. We've got some really great announcements on pub events, and that's it for now. Let's get to the show. So we've got Jeff Hicks, who's Executive Vice President at ALPA National, but he's also a captain here at Frontier. He serves on the R&I committee, and we have Celeste Sweeney, who is a benefit specialist up at ALPA, working with multiple carriers, and just found out she also maintains a database for all ALPA carriers. She's really kind of the point person that Jeff talks to up at ALPA National to get a better understanding of what's going on across the industry, benchmarking, all the things that are really important as we go into Section 6 negotiations. So to start it off, Jeff, welcome on the show. I want to thank you for joining me. One, you vouched for me, which I really appreciate, got me into this position as the podcast host for the pilot group. So thank you for that. And can you let everybody know how you started at Frontier, what you're doing beforehand, what qualifies you to understand the gripping and exciting world of retirement insurance, and what's your involvement as we go into Section 6 negotiations?
Sure, Jason. Thanks again for the invite. Thanks for what you do. Thanks for stepping up and volunteering. It makes a big difference. The podcasts have been a big hit, so I appreciate that. So my experience really goes back to 1992 when I graduated college, and I took the first good job I can get. Had a lot of college debts to pay. Worked for a company called American Medical Security. Started off as a customer service representative, and I was promoted in-house to the district sales manager training program. And eventually, I was put out in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I was a district sales manager for the eastern part of the state, and I had approximately 150 independent agents that I was responsible for. They were independent agents, not captive, meaning that I was responsible for making sure that they were supported, trained. They used me for enrollment meetings, sales pitches, any type of support that they needed to get the job done. One of those agents bought what's called a third-party administrator, a TPA, and he asked me to come on board and help him run it. So I came on board and I was appointed vice president of that company. It was called Employee Group Services. And basically, we processed self-funded claims for partially self-funded entities, mainly municipalities in the Iowa region. That really was what got me started in the insurance business. I was a licensed insurance agent back then in the life and health lines. But, you know, flying was my passion. I was tired of working 60, 65 hours as a vice president of a small company in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and decided to pursue flying full time. So I left that, flew full time, and started a full time flying experience with AirNet Systems. Flew cargo for a little while, survived that, single pilot, all weather, no autopilot. That was a great experience. And eventually went to Calm Air, and then we went on strike in 2001. And then I had left just prior to that, flew corporate for a while, got back into the airlines in 2012 with ExpressJet. And that's when I really got involved with the union, where I was on the P2P committee, I was on the R&I committee, and I was an ACE mentor. ACE is Aviation Collegiate Education Club. Started at Frontier in January of 2016. So how I got started with Alpha Work here at Frontier really involved an injury that I had back in 2017 where I went out on disability. And while on disability, I realized that I could not contribute to my 401k. So I was unable to fully fund my 401k for the rest of the year while I was out on disability. I didn't understand why this was an issue. So I decided to find out how we could fix it, if there was even a fix for it. And I found a fix. I presented it to the MEC. I presented it to the National R&I Committee. And that's really what got me involved in my ALPA work here at Frontier. ALPA National invited me to speak at the 2019 R&I conference, which I did. That was an interesting presentation because a lot of the other airline R&I teams that were in the room realized that they also had the same problem that we did. And this was a gaping hole that no one ever really thinks about until you're in that situation and you're on disability. There's only two carriers that provide that type of protection as far as making contributions to their 401ks when their pilots are on disability, Delta and Alaska. Those were the only two ALPA air carriers that had that type of protection in place at the time. And the rest of the R&I teams in there from other carriers were kind of shocked because it's not something that came across their radar and it's not something that they ever thought about. So suddenly, all these carriers were wanting that protection for their pilots when they're out on disability. I believe Hawaiian just secured that in their latest contract. And I know that there are other airlines that are also curious about it since I presented it back in 2019 at the National R&I Conference. That subsequently got me an invite to the National R&I Committee. So I was appointed to the National R&I Committee in 2020. I was also the Secretary Treasurer of Council 167 from 2019 to 2021. And in 2019, I was also appointed to the Frontier R&I Committee as chairman. And in 2023, I started my two-year term. So January 1st, I started my two-year term as the Executive Vice President of the Executive Council for Group B1. And shortly thereafter, I was also appointed to the Structured Services and Financial Review Committee. So I serve as Executive Vice President at the national level, and I also serve on two national committees. So I stay pretty busy. I'm in DC a lot, and I also fly the line a lot. I'm not on full-time flight pay loss like a lot of people think. I'm out there probably flying 50 to 60 block hours a month.
What I love about your story, Jeff, and there's a lot there that I hadn't heard before, so I really appreciate sharing that. It shows that if you're really aware and you can put together an argument and bring it to ALPA, they're going to listen. I think there's a lot of things that pilots think they want to have in their career, but there's a lot of things that pilots don't realize that they can have as well. And we have to be aware of these topics. We have to know that they exist to be able to negotiate for them. And I'm grateful that you're in the position to be knowledgeable on the subject and have the ability to present it in a way that it gets listened to and considered and may work itself into the next contract in some way, shape, or form. Thanks for all that work, and I appreciate everything you're doing here locally and on the national level.
The 5x5 podcast wants to hear from you. Throw us a dart at dart.alpa.org or via our app and let us know what we're doing well, where we need improvement, and what you want to hear in upcoming episodes. We hear you loud and clear.
Also on the call with us today, we have Celeste. Celeste is, again, a benefits specialist for ALPA. She lives up in Virginia, just down the road from ALPA National Headquarters. Celeste, can you give us an idea of your background? You told me as you joined ALPA, you learned that you love working with the pilots, you love working with ALPA. Let us know why that is and how it is that you interact with Jeff, our MEC, as well as the other carriers. How do you have your finger on what's going on at the national level?
Yeah, thanks, Jason. So first of all, I work on the retirement insurance team at ALPA, and that team is comprised of benefit specialists, benefit attorneys, and other professionals that are here focused on retirement and insurance issues for our pilot groups. Within that department and my role specifically, my task can vary and responsibilities can vary. I can be providing guidance on complex benefits issues and usually involving a claim denial or any issues with benefits and retirement insurance grievances that come up. I work closely with the Labor Relations Councils at each pilot group and their R&I committees. I also maintain this extensive database that contains information about welfare and retirement information for every U.S. pilot group that's a part of ALPA. And it also has some non-ALPA carriers in that database as well for the information that I do have on them. That component is so important in the pattern bargaining and preparing for negotiations, just to benchmark against peers and have an idea of what we're seeing across the industry. And as I mentioned before, and even Jeff alluded to this, it's great to be a part of ALPA and having all these pilots together in the same room and talking about their issues, or having our R&I team working with all these pilot groups across the U.S., because we're seeing the same issues arise at different airlines. And that allows us to brainstorm problem solving, make preventative measures to ensure that they're not going to happen at different airlines where they haven't come up yet, or even making sure that what we're asking for in negotiations is meeting the industry standard. I know I mentioned that I love working at ALPA in the pilot groups, and I think that really stems from every pilot I've talked to has been just one great person to work with. And then also my passion with working on retirement insurance stems from wanting to help people. As Jeff mentioned in his story, when you go out on disability, when you have these big life moments where, you know, your healthcare is all of a sudden really important, your 401k contributions while you're on disability are important. Those things, they matter and they add up, and it's a really stressful time for people. And I want to be there to provide support. So that's why I got into working with benefits, and that's why I really enjoy my job, is being able to help pilots.
That's all really good information. The thing that I think is interesting about having both you and Jeff on this call today is national support, right? So when we look at the infrastructure of ALPA, you're part of that being in the Virginia area, constantly involved, meetings, going to the office, dealing with all these different carriers. You mentioned non-ALPA carriers. I'm just going to throw it out there. There's probably companies like American Airlines and Southwest Airlines. To the extent that you understand their retirement insurance plans, you're monitoring that as well for comparisons, right?
That's correct. Yes. To the extent that we have that information available, we're monitoring it. There are also some express carriers that I monitor as well.
So you've probably been paying a lot of close attention to what's going on in the American Airlines agreement in principle that will soon become a TA, as well as obviously United Airlines current. Mm-hmm. I believe it's moving to the position of a TA by the time this podcast episode's coming out, correct?
Hopefully it'll be moving to a TA by that point in time. Yes. Yeah.
I think it's important. This is one of the great resources Jeff has when he goes up there to help all of the pilots within B1 of ALPA, which Frontier sits at, to have an understanding of the insurance plans, the retirement plans, how they work, how they're implemented, the costs associated with it when it comes to Section 6 negotiations. So, Jeff, can you let us know how this all works? How does a local MEC talk to and learn from and work with the people up at National when it comes to deciding on the retirement insurance benefits that we have, but also what we negotiate for? And how does that come back down into the negotiations here as we go into Section 6 negotiations?
Did you know you can subscribe to 5x5 and be notified immediately upon publication? Most of our recent downloads have been coming from browsers like Safari or Chrome. We made it simple to subscribe. Go to the show notes and click the subscribe link. It will take you to a list of podcast apps. Click your favorite. Your app will open up to this podcast. Click subscribe and never miss an episode.
Yeah, that's a really good question. First of all, we monitor company compliance with and the delivery of all negotiated benefits, which are provided to the pilots in accordance with the CBA. We also look at, we study, we design any R&I benefits which the MEC believes may have value to the Frontier pilots. And we also meet with the company to discuss concerns, performance, and suggest any changes. So really, in a nutshell, we monitor the CBA-protected benefits and research and recommend anything that we think may be beneficial to the pilots moving forward. What we don't do, and what's really important for people to understand, is we're not insurance agents. We're not financial advisors. We're really only volunteers. And we don't want to be insurance agents. We don't want to be financial advisors. There's liability associated with that. And We don't want to get ourselves into a position of where we are advising the company on tax law changes, on state mandated benefit changes. That's not our job. That's not what we do. That doesn't follow under the R&I umbrella. We don't want to go down that path. That's really the company's responsibility to do that. And I know some pilots out there are concerned that maybe the company may not be doing that. Trust me, they're doing that. They have a paid benefits staff on team. They have their own attorneys. They are fully aware of what's going on in the benefits world. And they've got their own insurance brokerage team as well. You know, there is so much availability of information and resources at National. It runs so deep. It's simply astonishing and amazing. And they've been doing it for decades, a long, long time. It's important to have one of your pilots up at the national level, because the resources that we have access to, we would have access to those resources anyway, but you just don't know what you don't know. Having someone local at the national level, you make those connections, you build that networking. That's really important. One example I can give you is to what we do, or what I can do, or what anybody else can do that has those national connections, is I knew that we were entering into negotiations this year. At the beginning of this year, I approached Celeste and her team, and I said, look, here's what I'm going to need to help our MEC and help our negotiating committee move forward in their bargaining sessions with the company. I really need a spreadsheet on how our benefits compare to our large jet peers, both ALPA and non-ALPA, if we can get it. And they did a really nice job of putting that together. And it's pretty interesting to see where we fall among our large jet peers. And while I can't share all of that information, and I really don't want to, because I don't want to negotiate in public, that's not my job. But I do share that with the MEC. And of course, the MEC directs the NC. And they use that information, that's valuable information, going forward. So that's one really good example of how we work with National to get the information that we need moving forward.
And we have this team that's providing expertise on in subject matters for retirement insurance. And there's also other subject matter expertise within ALPA, but the pilots are setting the agenda. So any survey results that the pilot groups are answering, whatever the MEC and the negotiating committee are deciding to focus on, as well as any darts of reoccurring issues, those are really setting the tone for what we're looking at during those negotiations and what we might be potentially adding or trying to fix within negotiations.
Yeah, so you're up there analyzing the trends, monitoring. I think it's great you bring up darts, right? So I often tell people, someone reach out to me or I'll see it online or something, and almost the immediate response is to send a dart. And even if they have a solution to it, that's great that somebody else has helped them find a solution, but the dart allows Jeff and allows you, Celeste, to see trends, to pick up and identify weaknesses that we might have in our contract, to see where people are struggling. Jeff, when you and I were talking, we mentioned how difficult it can be coming back and getting online after a leave of absence. So you can see that in dealing with the individuals, but having the DART information around that is extremely helpful as well, right?
DARTs are extremely important. And even if you don't have a particular question, if you want to leave a comment, an experience that you've had, the DART is the best way to do that. Because really what we do is we take that information and we de-identify it, of course, and we categorize it. And per the CBA, the R&I committee meets with the company at least twice a year, and we share that de-identified information with the company. I just had a meeting with them a couple of weeks ago in Denver. We discussed what we're going to be seeing for the following year's rates, medical rates, things like that. But we do meet with company and their insurance brokerage, the Schwab representatives and other people. It's actually quite a large meeting. There's usually 20 to 25 people. So for instance, when the company outsourced their FMLA from what they used to do internally, and now they use FMLA source, that didn't go exactly smoothly. And we received a lot of darts on that. And we were able to go to the company and share that information with them and suggest improvements with FMLA sourced. And I'm not sure the company would have been aware of the difficulties that the pilots were experiencing with FMLA sourced, because no other employee groups in the company have anything like the DART system. So the DART system brings value to the company in that it is an early warning radar, if you will. It's a trended indicator. And we do take the time to categorize that data and share it with the company.
You bring up insurance rates. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we're a self-funded health insurance model. Is that correct with Frontier?
I would call it a partially self-funded model. There's self-funding and there's partially self-funding. Self-funding is where the employer is large enough, like a General Electric or an IBM, where they assume total risk of and total liability of all claims. Partially self-funded entities like Frontier, they purchase stop-loss coverage. So when a particular claim on an individual hits a stop-loss amount, let's say $1 million, then the stop-loss carrier, such as Lloyd's of London, pays over and above that stop loss. And there's also an aggregate coverage for the stop loss, where if the total claims for all the employees Frontier hits a specific amount, I don't know what that is, let's say $10 million, then the stop loss carrier for that would kick in and pay those claims over and above $10 million on a plan year basis.
The structure that Jeff's talking about with the partial self-funded and the stop loss, that's very common. A lot of companies use that same exact structure.
Sure. So it's important, I guess, the way we as employees utilize the system, the care that we seek all has a cost. I only bring this up because I grew up in a family business and we were partially self-funded, much along the same lines. And the employer cost, the illnesses, the sickness, the things that we see happen to individuals does affect the bottom line and the rates that they're able to produce that insurance at, right?
It's like any company out there, a lot of it depends on the demographics of the employees at the company. If you have a lot of young employees, your claims historically are going to be less than you would if you had a lot of older employees. So demographics factor into it, plan design factors into it, in that how rich are the benefits in the plan? The richer the benefits, obviously, the more costly the plan. And I'll speak to when you're dealing with partially self-funded or self-funded entities, like here at Frontier, the company is, in essence, the insurance company. So they can sit down and make changes to the insurance policy as they see fit, as long as it meets the guidelines of federal and some state mandated benefits, of course. So that's good to know. The employer has a lot of leeway in how they structure their benefits.
Pilots are generally a healthy workforce. Our careers depend on it, but that's not the only thing that affects the rates that we pay for through the insurance. How does your committee monitor overall healthcare costs that the pilots pay? Where do our costs come from? And what affects our pocketbook in this area?
Well, we monitor it per CBA 27B medical costs. So we have the right to request the actuarial data from the company, and we hire our own independent actuary to review those costs and make sure they're in line with what the CBA says. Things that affect healthcare rates are obviously claims and claims usage. From my experience in the industry, you have your good years in claims and you have your bad years in claims. A good year in claim, you're going to trend below what the actuaries determine your medical costs are going to be for the specific demographic makeup of your employee group. And sometimes those claims are higher than what they anticipate. So the actuaries sit down and they determine what the medical plan rates are going to be for the following year based on the previous year or years of claims experience.
Are there things that distinguish a difference between Frontier and other carriers that you look at where we may be paying a higher out-of-pocket fee than somebody else?
As far as the surcharges are concerned with our healthcare coverage, we are the outlier there. And I will say that the $75 per month per child over two children surcharge, no one else does that. Frontier is the only one that does it. So we're an outlier there.
the spousal surcharge of $250 a month. We are the outlier there as well. The only other carrier that there's only one other ALPA carrier that has a spousal surcharge, and that's $50 a month.
Like what you're hearing? Please take a moment to share the 5x5 podcast on social media or text it to that pilot who has no idea there is a podcast. An informed pilot group is a unified pilot group.
Jeff, months ago when we started talking about the idea of this episode, you mentioned the idea of merging with Spirit. When you started looking into things, how that changed your entire perspective around your role and I guess the benefits even that we have it here at Frontier. How did that opportunity to look into the merger process and seeing what Spirit had on our books as far as retirement insurance type ideas, how did that change how you approach your position and the way that you look at the benefits for a pilot group?
Sure. I can't speak specifically to what went on behind the scenes between the merger of Frontier and Spirit, what the MEC was doing, what the NC was doing with the merger committee, what I was doing. So I'll speak in a hypothetical sense to that. And again, this goes back to why it's important to have local pilots at the national level. So one of the things that I did is approach the R&I teams of other carriers that have gone through mergers in the past and talk to their R&I chairman. I know all of the R&I chairman and all of the ALPA carriers. We all work together. That's a benefit of me being on the National R&I Committee. I have that access. I have that communication, which is fantastic. Everyone's been great to work with. And these individuals give me pointers, give me suggestions. So hypothetically speaking, when we look at two carriers merge, we do a comparison side by side of how one carrier's benefits compare to the other carrier's benefits. And it's really easy when you have a carrier that has superior benefits over the other. Well, that's easy because you're just going to try to adopt everything that other carrier has as far as their superior benefits is concerned. If it's not that cut and dry, then you look at basically cherry picking the best of both benefit structures. And of course, ALPA National is very helpful in making that happen.
FMLA is a subject that I know very little about. I got to admit that I've never used it. I don't understand it. I've never felt the need to, but I'm sure it's something that I'm going to utilize at some point in my career. It seems everybody has to, for some reason. What are the reasons for FMLA? What does it mean? How is it federally insured? How has ALPA helped make it better utilized for pilots specifically? And what should pilots know about this benefit?
Yeah, FMLA, or the Family Medical Leave Act, is a federal program. ALPA was instrumental in making sure that it was applicable to pilots. The typical standard definition of what an eligible employee and how the unpaid leave is broken up doesn't really work well with the pilot profession. We were able to amend the law in order to allow pilots who have worked 60% of their monthly guarantee or at least 504 hours over the previous 12 months receive the entitlement of 72 days of unpaid job protected leave that they can use within that 12-month period. And FMLA is simply unpaid job protected leave, and it ensures that when you come back from your leave, you will still have the same job as when you left or something comparable. And it can be used for your own serious health issue, for a family member's serious health issue, to take care of a service member, or for bonding with a newborn child. Those are all appropriate times to use FMLA. Typically, FMLA is paired with your CBA protected leaves. So you would be receiving pay during that time through that CBA protected leave in different instances.
So it sounds like it's unpaid as far as the letter of the law at the federal level goes, but
yeah,
because of the way that we negotiate our contract and because of the way that we have benefits provided to us, we can utilize that unpaid leave in conjunction with our sick time that we've built up or vacation time that we might have in the bank. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes. And that's how you're getting that pay portion through it. And with FMLA, you can use, the company can dictate that it is used in conjunction with your CBA protected leave or your paid leaves. But what you can't do is use your CBA protected leave and then apply for FMLA, which is unpaid but job protected, after you've already exhausted that paid portion.
Okay. Jeff, how does, is that what Celeste just ended there with? Is that something that we see the pilots commonly doing when they go seek FMLA? Are they perhaps utilizing it in the wrong order, or are we doing a pretty good job of utilizing the program properly?
With anything insurance or benefit related, there is always some ignorance there among anybody, because it's just not something that you utilize very often. So what I would suggest pilots do, and we always tell pilots to know their contract. Well, I always tell pilots to read their, to know their insurance policy, to read their insurance contract, and to know their benefits, because when it's time to use those benefits, knowing how they work, how you have access to them, what's paid, what isn't, is very important. So I would direct the pilots to go on to UltaPro, and right in the center of UltaPro, there's the leave of absence section. FMLA is in there. It talks about FMLA source. There's good videos in there. There's really good information that the company provides. And if they would take the time to go through that and understand FMLA, there's also FMLA.gov, I believe, which is the governmental website they can reference. Intermittent FMLAs tend to be the most darts that we see. So that's covered in there as well. So there's a lot of resources there that are available to the pilots. I would just suggest that they take the time to educate themselves.
Jeff, your position's real interesting because you oversee and you communicate all the time with all these different R&I committee chairmen across the industry. One thing across the spectrum that I've seen in negotiations with other carriers is a different way of looking at what we call sick time. There's paid time off, PTO. There's all these different programs. What sort of things do you see happening across the industry that's intriguing to you?
Well, that's interesting. A lot of different properties do a lot of different things regarding their sick time or their paid time off. One of the things that I personally, in my opinion, that I've seen that I really like is paid time off accrual, where you're able to sell blocks of your PTO back to the company. And why that's interesting is because that is a benefit that you earn and you're able to sell that back to the company. And it really, if you think about it, it incentivizes pilots not to use PTO.
I know, Jeff, you've got a ton you want to talk about. You've recently given a couple of presentations to the MEC negotiating committee. I found it really fun. I went to one of the MEC meetings back when I first started this job and really enjoyed watching you talking to our negotiating committee and just letting your passion for these products come through. I was amazed to see this negotiating committee member, their understanding of these subjects too. It gave me a lot of confidence listening to you guys.
I want to say thank you to Jeff and Celeste for taking the time to sit down with me. Talking about retirement insurance, the benefits packages that we have here at Frontier. I just sat down with Jeff a second time. So all together, about 3 hours of conversation. We're trimming it, making it much more digestible, a lot easier for you to listen to. So look for additional parts coming out soon. I'm really excited about the one we recorded today. So subscribe if you haven't done so and be the first to hear it come out in the next week or two. Pub events coming up. Got a couple great events. Atlanta, I'm jealous of this one. They're going golfing. Golf and social event with a LEC 167 pub event following it. That's on September 21st. Additionally, you're going to find an event out in Denver. SPSC Family Awareness Pub event. Again, RSVP is required. This will be at Casa Bonita in Lakewood, Colorado. Go on to the ELPA app, go into the ELPA website, and RSVP for these events. They're great. You're going to get to talk to leadership, going to ask your questions, get some better information one-on-one with these people, and really show your family a great time. My family went to the one in Tampa a few months ago, the baseball game. We loved it. A lot of shop talk with friends that I don't get to see very often, but a great experience for everybody involved. Thank you, and stay tuned for another episode.